This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The march towards school privatization is expected to escalate under Donald Trump's new education secretary, Betsy DeVos. DeVos is a believer in religious education and charter schools and has promised to, quote, expand school choice, which of course is code for privatization. So far, however, her biggest action has been to undo consumer protections that President Obama put in place for student loan borrowers. As members of Congress go into recess to interact with their constituents, activists who want to preserve and strengthen public education are taking their fight to town hall meetings. Joining us to discuss what's at stake and what tools people can use is Diane Ravitch, award-winning leader in education and the author of 10 books, including The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and School Choice Are Undermining Education. She's a research professor of education at New York University and served as Assistant Secretary of Education and counselor to the Secretary of Education from 1991 to 93 under the George H.W. Bush administration. She's also the co-founder of the Network for Public Education. Welcome to the program, Diane.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
So we haven't had you on since DeVos was confirmed as Education Secretary. And so I would really love to get your view, your summary, if you will, of all of the ways in which she is so problematic and why her leadership of the Education Department is a huge problem for public education nationwide.
DeVos is very unusual. She's the first Secretary of Education, or the first leading federal official, because either the department or its predecessor, which was called the Office of Education, they've always been led by educators or by governors, but people who understood that 90% of the children in this country go to public schools. DeVos is unusual in that she is the first person antagonistic to public schools ever to hold this position. And she's a billionaire. Her fortune comes from her own family. She's an heiress, but also she married into the Amway family, which is another billionaire family. And she's used her very considerable wealth to fund candidates across the country who support either charters or vouchers. She has never supported public schools. She didn't attend public schools. Her children didn't attend them. And she has, as I said, she's an activist for school choice. So you will see an effort on her part to copy what's called the Florida model of vouchers.
Let's talk about that. What is the Florida model of vouchers? And it's so important for us to get our sort of facts right here, because we'll see a lot in the media about the successes of vouchers and so-called school choice or charter schools. But when you actually dig deep into indicators and measures of success, it's usually a different story. So what did Florida do?
Well, Florida, like most American states, has a constitutional amendment in its state constitution saying that it is not allowed to spend public money on religious schools. Most states have the same amendment. And back in 2012, Jeb Bush tried to repeal that amendment. He put forward a replacement called the Religious Freedom Amendment. And if you could imagine people voting no on a Religious Freedom Amendment, it happened in Florida. But it also happened in the year 2000 when Betsy DeVos sponsored a similar amendment in Michigan, and it went down by a vote of 69 to 31 in the state of Michigan. So neither her home state nor Florida actually permits public money to go to religious schools. And so Michigan has invested heavily in charters, which have been a disaster in Michigan. Most of them operate for profit. But in Florida, Jeb Bush helped to start a program called tax credits. And the way it works is that if a business owes, say, $100,000 in taxes, they can donate $100,000 to an organization called Step Up for Students, which gives out vouchers. And the corporation then gets a tax credit of $100,000, doesn't have to pay its state taxes, and the organization gives out vouchers. So this is the way they have been able to evade the state constitution. And at the same time, they have thousands of students, I think at this point, maybe 100,000 students in the state of Florida attending religious schools and other private schools. And most of the religious schools are fundamentalist schools, that teach creationism rather than evolution, and that have a Bible-based curriculum that teaches history and science and mathematics even through the filter of what's in the Bible. So it, in terms of success rates, they are far less successful than the traditional public schools that the children leave. But Betsy DeVos likes to say she's not a numbers person. There are now many studies that show that students who leave public schools to go to voucher schools actually lose ground academically. But she's not a numbers person, so she doesn't care about that.
Amazing to hear a Secretary of Education saying she's not a numbers person. I mean, the sad part of it is that Betsy DeVos herself is not very well educated, right?
Well, she's not. I mean, she's said some absolutely astonishing things. When there was a ceremony to hail the historically Black colleges and universities, she said they were examples of choice and the power of choice. And then everybody jumped all over her and said that the reason we have historically Black colleges and universities is because Black students were not allowed to attend the white colleges and universities. That's why they were created. So she quickly backtracked. But she says a lot of things that are simply ridiculous, like comparing public schools to choosing to use an Uber or a Lyft instead of a taxi. Those are consumer services. Public schools are public services, and she doesn't know the difference.
So let's talk about how people are fighting back and can join the fight. As you said, vast majority of American kids, school-age kids, go to public schools. You would imagine that for parents everywhere, this is a very serious and very personal fight. What are some of the things that people have been doing to ensure that their tax dollars actually go towards strengthening existing public schooling for their children? What are some of the things that people can do in confronting their members of Congress as they go into recess?
Well, the first thing they can do is to go to town hall meetings whenever their representatives hold town hall meetings. My own representative has a telephone town hall meeting. That way he's able not to confront people and to screen the callers and eliminate those that might challenge him. And he's a very strong Trump supporter. This is in Long Island, New York. But most people do have town hall meetings, and they can go to them and express their strong opposition to the DeVos-Trump agenda of charter schools and voucher schools, because this will destroy public education. It's very important that parents understand that every public dollar that goes to a non-public school is taken away from the public schools. There is no new pot of money. Trump is not putting up new money. In fact, he's slashing the budget of the Department of Education by 13%, by billions of dollars, eliminating after-school programs, teacher training programs, and all sorts of other programs that have been very important in the past. So it's very important to go to the town hall meetings. I would secondly recommend that people go to the web and look up Network for Public Education. The Network, which is a nonprofit organization that I was one of the co-founders, has created a toolkit for people to use. And it includes answers to very straightforward questions. One question, for example, is, are charter schools public schools? And the answer is no, they're not public schools. They are not subject to a democratically elected board. They're operated by private entrepreneurs. Some of them operate for profit. Even those that say they're nonprofit are also not public schools because they're not they don't accept all students. Even if they have a lottery, they end up excluding children with disabilities and excluding children who are English language learners. And they have the freedom to kick out the kids with low test scores. And where do these kids go? They go to the public school. The public school must, by law, accept everyone. And even when there are public schools that say we're for children who are gifted or were for children who have certain talents, they still have to place everyone. They can't simply kick them to the curb. The charter school can kick them to the curb, and only the public school will take them. So I think it's very important that citizens, especially those who've been to public school, as almost everyone in this country has been, or who are parents of public school children, say, we paid for these schools with our tax dollars. We are not giving them away to entrepreneurs, because once a charter school opens, the property, even though it was paid for with taxes, becomes the property of the entrepreneur. And the public then has to buy the property back from the entrepreneur that it gave it to.
So wow. This is
This is privatization. Charter schools are not public schools. Even when the law that creates them says calls them public charter schools, they are not public schools.
They're essentially a giveaway of tax dollars. So often you'll hear proponents of charter schools and proponents of vouchers cite poor kids, kids of color, kids in low-income neighborhoods as being the reason why we need charter schools and vouchers. They call it a civil rights issue, that vouchers can help kids in school districts that don't have good enough schools, have access to better schools. How do you respond to that? And how can people arm themselves with the facts on these issues when they confront their members of Congress during recess?
Well, the toolkit from the Network for Public Education has answers to these questions. I know the answers to these questions, and that is that you have to remember where school choice came from. The very idea of school choice was born in the 1950s as a response to the Brown decision. The Brown decision said that segregating children by their race was wrong and that all children should have access to the same schools. And so the politicians in the South, whether George Wallace or any of the other leading figures from Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, South Carolina, all of them said school choice is the answer. That way, white kids can go to white schools and black kids can go to black schools. This was a response to stop desegregation. What we know from research all over the world is that school choice programs lead to more segregation of every kind. Racial segregation, religious segregation, socioeconomic segregation, ethnic separation. People tend to cluster with people like themselves. And in public schools, the great virtue of public schools is, first of all, they're publicly supported. Secondly, they are democratically controlled. They're not controlled by plutocrats or Wall Street hedge fund managers or by financiers or by for-profit managers. They are controlled by elected school boards. That is democracy. And the other thing that's hugely important about public education is it's an opportunity where children can be with children different from themselves. They can learn to live with others who are not exactly like them. And to the extent there is choice, people will be with people like them. And the great irony of choice is that it is the school that chooses, not the family. The school will decide which students it wants. And last, if I were speaking to parents in a community that had low test scores, I would say, don't assume that you're going to be accepted by the voucher school that you want to go to. And if you're accepted, don't assume it's a better school. It will probably be a worse school, because in the voucher schools and in the charter schools, most of them do not have to hire trained teachers. There's tremendous turnover in the charter schools, and the voucher schools have almost entirely uncertified teachers. So don't leave a school with certified teachers to go to one that's worse.
And just a reminder, Congress will be in recess until April 23rd. So if you haven't yet gone to a town hall meeting but would like to do so, you can certainly look up the website of your member of Congress. And armed with the toolkit Diane has been talking about, which you can find at the Network for Public Education's website, you can bring up the issue of education. Diane, on this issue of teachers, don't we have a teacher shortage in the United States? How important is it for us to invest in teacher training and also encouraging young people to go into education as a career? Because our teachers are the backbone of good public schools.
Absolutely. And what is, I think, the reason for the teacher shortage is, first of all, teachers are not paid enough. I just this morning on my blog posted an article about Colorado having a massive teaching shortage. Nevada has a massive teaching shortage. Almost every state now has a teaching shortage. And that's because, first of all, teacher pay is too low. But secondly, because teachers are very demoralized by the testing regime that's been inflicted for the past 17 years, since No Child Left Behind was passed by the Bush administration. And then race to the top from the Obama administration made test scores the be-all and end-all of education. And most teachers became teachers because they wanted to nurture children, see every child develop to their fullest. They didn't think they would be simply test administrators and test prep administrators. And this is what education has turned into, is a race for higher scores. In my view, the standardized tests are destroying education. I wrote about this in the book that you mentioned, The Death and Life of the Great American School System. The testing has been very harmful because it distorts the purpose of education. The purpose of education is not to get higher test scores. The purpose of education is to become a knowledgeable citizen, to be able to participate in your society, to be prepared to live a full and complete life on your terms, and to develop yourself as a human being to the greatest extent possible.
And test then those don't... parents who send their kids to private schools, they know that, right? I mean, they are able to afford to send their kids to private school where the emphasis is on learning rather than standardized testing.
Right. I mean, the standardized testing has really warped education. And I believe that because the test scores of students are used to evaluate teachers. This is the case in many, many states. It was incentivized by Arne Duncan when he was Secretary of Education under Obama. He thought this was terrific, and it's actually invalid. It's deeply flawed, and it discourages teachers. And many teachers have left the profession. There has been not just a shortage of people coming into the profession, but a great number of people who've left the profession because this is not what they signed on for. They did not sign up for a test prep curriculum. They signed up for a different view of teaching, of the teacher as someone who nurtures human talent.
Diane, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people read your writings?
Well, they can, read my last two books, which I think are the most important books that I've ever written, The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education. And the most recent one is called Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to America's Public Schools. I mean, when people call themselves reformers, they don't want to reform schools. They want to privatize them. So this is, we're right now because of DeVos and because of all the money behind her and the Trump administration, she is determined to privatize, to send kids to religious schools. And this is an existential threat to our great public American education system.
And also your blog, DianeRavitch.net. We'll post links to those websites as well as list the books on our website later today. Thanks so much, Diane.
Wonderful. Thank you. It's great talking to you, Sonali.
My guest is Diane Ravitch, an award-winning leader in education, the author of 10 books, a research professor of education at New York University. Again, she blogs at DianeRavitch.net. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.